We are burning down the house here every Thursday at 8 on heritageradionetwork.com. A continuing conversation about architecture in which we tear down, lay forth, and build up the elements, the attitudes, opinions, obsessions, fantasies, passions, and ideas that inform and direct the creation of our built environment. I'm Curtis B. Wayne, your host. This evening's program is brought to you by TechServe, your number one source for everything related to the Macintosh computer. And also, did you know they have a professional audio department? This evening in studio is our guest, Joe Lay, who is an architect.
I don't know if you can actually technically call me that, but sure, I'll go with it.
Graduate architect.
I'm a graduate architect.
For our listeners, there is a fine distinction to all of you out there, but huge to us in the profession. The difference between a graduate architect and a registered architect after 5 or 6 or 7 years of school and then past the internship requirements. During all of that, you're a graduate architect, which means you graduated from an architectural program and have a professional degree.
Exactly.
And then you take the exam.
Yes. It's a huge deal, though. Like, for example, if I go to a bar and a lady asks me what I do, I have to almost always say architect. Because if I say designer, it doesn't come off as cool, she doesn't dig me as much, and she inevitably will walk away.
Yes, so. You and George Costanza.
Exactly.
That very useful.
Exactly. That's pretty much why I went into architecture, yes.
I just did it because I like to play with all the materials. I really dig the materials so much.
Right on.
Now, these days, the exam must take many, many, many hours. When I took it, it was one full week of 10 hours a day, every day, straight through. And that was the first part. And then the second part, the professional exam, was practices and contracts. And that was another 10 hours after you completed your 3 years of internship.
Right, exactly. And I would have done that had I had the option. But no, it takes a long time. Lots of people do it either relatively quickly after, you know, they'll study for a couple weeks, take a test, and then go on to the next test. There's used to be 9 in total. Now there's 7. They changed it up a bit, and they made it a little bit more people-friendly. But if you're someone like me who has ADD, like, I can't really pay attention more than, like, 2 minutes of architecture, other than my mind starts to wander.
So you're in trouble.
I know. I'm not looking forward to it.
Traditionally, the design exam was 12 hours.
That's what I heard.
And it was a joy. I took that exam at the New York Coliseum, which was located where the Time Warner Center presently is.
Right.
And we had about 1,100 people in there that day. And towards the end, and this was all hand drafting, you know, if you've ever seen an architectural drawing, there's interesting infills that designate materials. And so almost everybody had some concrete. And concrete's designation is little dots and little triangles. So the sound of 1,100 people stippling their concrete was an awesome experience.
That would sound like a pretty awesome thing to do.
Yeah, but now it's all electronic.
Yes. So instead of the stippling, you just hear the tapping of the keyboard.
Yeah. Now, the reason that I asked you here is not only just to talk about the bad old days of taking architectural exams, but to talk about sports architecture.
Yes.
Which is dear to all red-blooded Americans and blood-loving hooligans at soccer pitches in Europe, and I mean it's everywhere.
It is,
and has been everywhere since many centuries before Christ.
Yes,
I was just looking at the arena that I have visited several times in Paris, the Arène Lutèce,
right,
which was built to accommodate up to 17,000 people, and it's an oval arena, and they used it both for combat sport and for theatrical presentations.
Yeah,
luckily, people don't get killed all that often in professional sporting events. But I suppose one of the things that, as a sports architecture designer, that would include you.
Yes, I would agree.
The safety of the players is one of the prime things that you need to look out for.
Sure. I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't necessarily say that, you know, when we go into looking at a building or designing a sports arena, sports stadium, what have you, that's not the first thing on our mind is the safety of the players. I mean, that really kind of goes with the game.
Well, so artificial turf, yes or no?
Well, it depends on the game. I mean, what are we talking about? Soccer?
Let's talk about soccer.
Soccer? I'm not a fan of artificial turf for soccer, no.
What are the current opinions of the people who actually own the soccer teams? Do they care one way or the other?
You know, I mean, I couldn't really put...
Well, I heard a rumor that you're working on a soccer pitch someplace in, was it Mexico?
Sure.
And are they going to do turf there?
It's going to be turf. I mean, I think, I would say just in general that most teams or most owners would want a natural surface, only because it seems like the athlete in general prefers playing on a natural surface. I mean, especially when you talk to athletes growing up, you know, or, you know, they talk about their history and what went on, and, you know, they don't really talk about, you know, I grew up in this town and we had an artificial surface that I played at the community center and it was fantastic. I think, you know, usually it's the guys who they played in their backyard or, you know, they played at the community center or the field, their school or what have you. And typically it's all natural surface.
Well, yes, I would think that if you got tackled and you fell on, or went skidding on artificial turf, you could have a terrible burn.
You could, but there are actually some natural surface, or I'm sorry, some artificial surfaces out there that are relatively close to natural surface, but, you know, obviously you can't really replace the real thing.
Uh-huh.
I would say.
Well, professional football has gone to artificial surfaces in many of the stadiums, isn't that right?
Yes.
Especially the enclosed ones.
Yes. And a lot of that really just has to do with upkeep.
Sure.
I mean, you know, if you have a house, if you own a lawn, and, you know, you're trying to maintain your lawn, you realize and you understand the kind of maintenance and the...
Sure, you have to irrigate it.
Exactly.
You have to roll it. You have to aerate it with those spiky rollers.
Right.
And mow it.
Exactly.
Now, in Mexico, I would think that irrigation would be a big problem.
Potentially, right? I mean, but, I mean, you know, with anything, you can get water anywhere, pretty much anywhere if you wanted, if you really had the money for it.
So they irrigate large fields like this with water, I mean, like fire hoses, or are there irrigation systems that are built in?
I mean, there's the irrigation system is part of the design of the field. Yes, I couldn't really talk to you in depth about it because I don't get into that too much.
In your opinion, what is the most difficult aspect of a modern large sports facility? And many sports facilities are multi-purpose these days, aren't they?
Yes, they are, for the most part, yeah.
I mean, because, you know, the new Yankee Stadium, for example, or was it the other one, the new Mets Stadium? Which one was the venue for Paul McCartney?
I believe he played, I want to say it was the Mets Stadium, but I want to say he actually played at both. But now, if it was one or the other, I would say the Mets, but I'm not too sure.
And so that's a nice venue for a rock concert. You can have plenty of room to set up your stage, good sight lines, no columns.
Sure, sure.
Great acoustics,
yeah,
through amplification. And then for many years, the New York Giants played at Shea Stadium, or was it the Jets? I forget. Maybe
Meadowlands.
Both.
Yeah.
Before the Meadowlands.
Oh, okay.
So, multi-purpose stadiums. Let's take a brief break and come back and talk more specifically about Yankee Stadium. We are burning down the house. Curtis B. Wayne, your host, here with my guest in studio, Joe Lay, a sports architect.
Quite literally burning down the house, like there's a fire in the corner.
Well, it's warm in here.
It's a little warm.
It's August.
It's a little warm.
Yeah, where's my match? A question just came through the email. How excellent.
Is this like the first
email question of burning down the house?
Excellent. I'm so happy to be a part of this.
That's good. So the question is, what have modern sport arenas lost, if anything, owing to modern design? It's from SK8Hip at Hotmail. Have they lost anything? Are they older arenas? Are they old? Let's talk about baseball.
Okay.
The new stadiums are huge.
They're big.
About how many people, for example, Yankee Stadium, how many seats?
I actually don't know the exact number, but I don't know. I think it's about 40,000 per se, 50,000, something like that. But don't quote me, I don't know for sure.
We got to do research. I shouldn't ask that question if clearly, I didn't know the
clearly.
Answer. Well, I think, in my opinion, if you compare, for example, lovely old Wrigley Field in Chicago, my hometown, with these new stadiums, yeah, I liked the arcane nature of the old stadiums, the ball fields with the wooden seats, and when everyone was, and they still do, stamping and chanting, you could feel the structure move, which is once you become more aware of architecture could be a little bit disconcerting, but
sure.
Wrigley Field hasn't fallen in yet, and it's got the lovely ivy on the
it's beautiful
on the fence.
I love watching games there,
and it's a short field, so homers are always in constant play.
Yeah,
what is it about Yankee Stadium, by the way? It seems that the Yanks are not too lucky there. It seems like as if no one studied the air patterns that they were likely to develop.
Well, that was early on in the season. They're actually doing really well right now. They're
Didn't they move the outfield a little bit further?
Did they? I don't know.
I'd read that they were going to alter the configuration of the outfield a little bit so that it was a little harder to hit homers.
Well, I mean, early on in the season, I think they had some issues with home runs. I think in the news they were saying too many people were hitting home runs, but they're actually doing really well right now. From what I'm not a huge Yankees fan. I'm actually a Baltimore Orioles fan.
All right.
So I actually don't pay attention too much to the Yankees, but I think they're actually doing all right now. They're on top of the. I want to say they're actually they have the best record right now.
Okay. Well, the Orioles field there. I don't remember the name of it, but
it's Camden Yards.
Camden Yards. Camden. Was designed to be like the older ball fields, like
yes.
Fenway and
right.
Wrigley.
Right.
Do you think it's successful in getting that sort of nostalgic effect without it becoming truly old-fashioned?
I think so. I mean, you can't ever... The thing about sports stadiums I find that it's interesting and what actually kind of drew me into sports architecture was it's really the experiences that you get at a sports stadium, which is actually very, you can't really repeat it and you can't really replace it.
You mean by television or radio?
Of course, exactly. I mean, obviously anyone who's watched any kind of sports game in general, you know, there's a difference between watching a game in your living room on your couch through a TV or radio, and there's a between watching a game live,
sure,
and actually at the stadium.
Yeah,
and you know, I think in particular with Camden Yards, I think they were pretty successful at the time. You know, I think it was something that Baltimore, the city of Baltimore, needed. And, you know, the Orioles... Or
definitely that part of Baltimore needed a reason for people to come in to revitalize it.
Right, exactly.
So that's one of the good things that sports facilities can really do for a city.
Right, exactly. And sports facilities in general are just a huge... They have a huge impact on just the face and the idea of cities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, they as much you, if you're not a sports fan or if you are a sports fan, you know, the look and the feel of a stadium as it pertains to that particular city is very unique, and it's different from city to city, I think.
I tend to think of ball fields as being pretty much one is like the next is like the next. They're big. They're rather imposing as you approach them because of the scale. And it could be easy for me to feel sort of anonymous and lost.
If you're a critic of stadiums, sure, I could see that point of view. But I would say people in particular cities, and you know, different fans. You know, for example, fans in Baltimore are going to feel differently and experience things differently at Camden Yards than fans would say in San Diego for the Padres. They're going to have a different feel and a different experience for their stadium. And I think that's the most interesting thing, going back to, you know, what drew me to sports architecture. The most interesting thing I found about sports architecture is the fact that you are basically surrounded by, you know, like, you know, like I said, 40 to 50,000 people of all different types, of all different races and beliefs and whatever. And you're in this stadium, you're in this container, and it's so emotional. You know, you're watching the game, and no matter who you're rooting for, if you're rooting for the home team or if you're rooting for the visiting team, it's so emotionally charged, the atmosphere and the experience.
And intentionally so.
Intentionally, right.
Right.
And the fact that, you know, even though the field is the same, even though the dimensions and all that, the field of play and the all the kind of nuances of the game are the same, or, you know, pretty much the same from stadium to stadium, you're never going to get that experience at that time anywhere else. And it doesn't matter if
Are we talking about regional differences in tailgating preferences?
No, just in terms of the game in general, if you're at a game. I mean, I think it's one of the few places where you can see an original moment, you know, or an act that will never happen again at that and under those circumstances.
And that is specific to that place.
Exactly.
And that group of fans.
Right.
And those teams.
And I think that's a very powerful thing. I think that's the reason why people go to sporting events. And I think it's a pretty awe-inspiring thing to be able to almost kind of manipulate that experience as much as I can, or if I don't.
You know? I understand. We were speaking about theater beforehand.
Right.
Theater design is totally manipulative.
Very.
The design of the theaters themselves are similar to the preconceptions that you would have or goals that you would have in a much larger sporting venue. But sight line is important. Ease of getting to your seat.
Right.
Ease of getting to the restrooms. Availability of snacks in standard theaters, not so much.
Right.
And back to a previous question. What are really challenging aspects of designing a sports facility?
Was that a previous question? I don't remember you asking.
I'll give you a leading question of how about the wouldn't the number one challenge be the safety of the players? And you said, yeah, well, yeah, maybe.
My answer to that was we just that's all part of the game. I mean, we
the gladiators must die. So
yeah, we don't tell football players to hit harder. I mean, that's just that's all a part of the game. That's
nor do you make the field softer and bouncier.
I don't take that in consideration only because that's the game that is created and that was already established.
So you take that as a given.
I take that as a given. Yes.
So architecturally, then, what are some of the challenges these days in projects that you're aware of?
I would say the challenges of architecturally with stadium design with sports stadiums are just being able to be creative in the sense that doing something new with a stadium or, just doing something different with a stadium, if that makes
sense.
You
mean a different expression of...
A little bit. Well, I mean, if you break down a stadium to its barest parts, let's just go about it that way.
Yeah, let's do that.
You have a field of play. Mm-hmm. Which I've already said is a given, or at least I'm understanding it as a given. It's an established, and then you have the stands or where an area where the spectators are,
mm-hmm.
and then those are pretty much the two essentials, and then beyond that you have the facilities. So you have the concessions and you have the toilets for the spectators, but those aren't really necessary if you talk about just the pure idea of watching a sporting event. Those are just an amenity.
Well, sure. If we go back and we look at the Greek and Roman amphitheaters, it's the stepped seating, and
right.
It's the arena.
Right. You have your stage, and you have your audience.
That's right.
And then and that's really about it. And then I guess, and to a lesser extent, you have some line of security if that's necessary.
Mm-hmm.
But when you think about that, or when you think about sports architecture in that sense, there isn't really much more you can improve on, or there isn't much more that you can build upon that, because those are really the essentials, I believe, that you would actually need for any kind of sporting event. So how do you add to that, or how do you subtract from
that? Which gets you back to the main challenge of the architectural expression of how this particular building...
Right.
Will be visually different or exciting or distinctive or and all of those things. And also, to a certain degree, I suppose that you must take into account the context of the town, the location.
Certainly, yeah.
So a Yankee Stadium in the Bronx necessarily looks different than the new or fairly new White Sox stadium in Chicago.
Yeah.
But actually, they don't look that different. They're big, white, rounded kind of buildings that are very tall and have many entrances and exits.
Well, again, I think I would go back to what I was saying earlier about the fan experience is and how one person looks at a stadium. You know, from the outset, you know, as a critic, yeah, if you look at all the stadiums, if you put them in a lineup one next to another, you're going to see a lot of similarities and a lot of things that look the same. But I think when you're coming to the stadium and you're coming for a specific experience, you don't really look at, you know,
you're not looking at the building. You're in the flow and the moment of being in the crowd of fans.
Exactly. It's the whole entire experience, and the architecture is a part of that, I would say, even if it's subconscious. You know, like, I'm not going to tell you that some guy who buys a ticket, you know, to a Knicks game is going, you know, bought the ticket saying, hey, I'm going to go to Madison Square Garden and check out Madison Square Garden. He's not thinking that. He's going to watch the Knicks.
Granted.
But I think at the same time, subconsciously, you know, he's thinking, I'm going to Madison Square Garden. I'm going to go watch the Knicks. If they have a really good game, it's going to be great. You know, I could be sitting next to some guy who may not be a Knicks fan. That might be interesting. Or, you know, I could be sitting next to some lady who is a really big Knicks fan, and that might make the evening even better.
So are you suggesting, speaking as a graduate architect, as a designer, even though that doesn't have the cachet, that your goal is that the architecture at a certain point becomes invisible, and that the prime experience for each fan is full enjoyment of the game?
No, I wouldn't suggest that per se. I was trying to answer one of the questions that you posed to me, and now I've kind of lost my train of thought because there are several questions, and I think we haven't even answered the email question.
What have modern sport arenas lost, if anything, with modern design? Or have they gained?
I don't think they've lost anything.
Is a new stadium better than an old one? Because the sight lines are better or the seats are more comfortable?
I mean, again, it's subjective.
It's easier to get in and out.
I think it's subjective to the fan.
Well, if you were going to take a point of view, do you think things have gotten better, or are we just holding the line on trying to hold on to traditional and accepted given forms that need to be replaced every 50 years because they get worn out?
Well, I think I would say they've gotten better. I mean, you know, just...
Well, the seats are more comfortable.
The seats are very much more comfortable. I'll give you that. I mean, I would even just say in terms of acoustics and again, maybe I'm kind of going on the theme here of the atmosphere, but, you know, I would say the atmosphere of, say, like a modern-day sporting event now probably is a lot louder, you know, a lot more intimate than some of the...
I mean, because the added audio-visual effects through the Jumbotron boards...
Well, that's part of it. I mean, you know, I think sports architecture nowadays, architects realize that fans want to get closer to the game, and they want to feel as close to the field and to the players as much as possible. So I think any sports architect in general would want to try to accommodate that as best that they can. And by doing that, they create an atmosphere that, you know, gets you closer to the game. You're kind of closer to the person sitting next to you. And it creates this experience that I, again, don't think can be replaced or is pretty unique in itself, depending on the game and the time of the year and all that stuff. So,
well, let's take another brief break, and let's come back and talk about the differences between enclosed stadiums and open air stadiums.
looking on the defenseless. Don't regret you, nothing really to mention. Look into the mirror and I'm making a censure. Whoa, black people in the mall, breathe. Came around the corner and she caused me to freeze up, ease up. Watch how the world could tease us, tease us. My only G.O.D. can please us. Hey, it's every end of my mama too. Show me how to roll without breaking the rules. Paying my dues, MC jumping out shoes. The socks to get with lyrical fox, don't stop. Whoa, black people, time to shine. Everything is fine when you're losing your mind. I'm like a black alligator, freestyle battle rap. Doesn't get better than that. It's that cat in the back.
We are burning down the house. Jolay is our sports architect guest today.
What's happening?
And this is brought to you by TechServe, the number one source for everything related to the Mac, sales service, and also Pro Audio. It's a fabulous place. If you're in New York, you should definitely go check it out on West 23rd Street. Jack Inslee is our engineer, and he's joined us in the studio, and EJ Dukoski is our producer. Jack, you had some thoughts.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
About the decrepitude of Wrigley Field.
not to say that I don't appreciate the stadium for what it is, but I was wondering if there's sort of a back and forth between the community, who obviously has a special place in their heart for a place like Wrigley Field, versus the developers, who would argue that this field is falling apart quite literally. And if there have been battles back and forth.
Jack, have you been there recently?
No, it's been maybe 6 years since I've
failed. Fail. I can't answer your question then, because you apparently have not been there in the last 5 years.
It was bad when I was there 5 years ago. So I mean,
has Wrigley been fixed up?
I believe so. I mean, I believe they did some renovation in the outfield. That's pretty nice. Last time I was there, a buddy of mine got married. He had his bachelor party there in Chicago. We watched a game. It was fantastic. Mm-hmm. I had a pretty awesome time.
No, the question is separate of the experience of the stadium from the angle of the fan. Obviously, I mean, Wrigley Field is a sacred place for fans, as Yankee Stadium was, but they tore down Yankee Stadium.
Not yet.
Well, not yet.
Not yet, but eventually.
True enough, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, sorry. One more time, the question, just so I'm...
Well, I think Jack was trying to get into a discussion of to what degree does nostalgia play in the fan experience of a place?
I would say, again, it varies per game. For baseball, obviously, baseball's a very nostalgic game. So... You have the nostalgia plays a big deal in terms of the game and how things are seen. You know, I was fortunate enough to go to some Yankee Stadium games, original Yankee Stadium games. I've been fortunate enough to go to some existing Yankee Stadium games, and you know, I like them both. I have this, you know, I have fun either way whenever I'm watching the Yankees. And, yeah, I mean, definitely nostalgia comes into play, especially with the fans. But, you know, I think at some point in time, even the fans will admit, you know, if you're sitting, you know, in a seat that hasn't been looked at or hasn't been, you know, maintained in the last 20 or 30 years, and it's kind of coming off its hinges, and you know, it's not super comfortable, and you're paying more attention to the fact that, you know, you can't find a good spot in the seat more to the game, then I think that becomes part of it. You know, anything that draws your attention away from the game, I would say any fan would probably appreciate a little bit of an upgrade or a little bit of an amenity change from that.
So do you think people will in the future be nostalgic about the new Yankee Stadium?
Sure.
Is there enough to love about it?
I think so. I mean, again, it goes back to the game. If you're watching, if the Yankees go to the World Series this year, and they're playing the World Series here in the inaugural year of the stadium, and you know, they make it there and they win it in you know, in seven games. You know, someone who's at that game is going to appreciate and cherish that moment for as long as that person's going to live. And if 20, you know, years down the line, 30 years down the line, if they decide to build something new, yeah, of course he's going to have a little bit of nostalgic for that place. And again, it goes back to, again, the experience of the game and just being there, being with the fans, and being surrounded in that atmosphere. It's a very powerful thing.
So in a way, nostalgia can be developed almost despite the venue. Case in point, Madison Square Garden.
Of course.
Which is hated by everyone.
Exactly. I mean, it is. It really, you know, it's as I think subconsciously, the architecture is there, but again, it's, you know, the person coming to the game is watching the game, and they want to come for the experience. And if something, you know, monumental happens, not them saying that they're going to expect that. It doesn't happen all the time. Mm-hmm. But if something monumental happens, and I mean, that moment's going to be registered in that person's mind for a very long time, and regardless of where it happens, you know, it's a pretty big deal.
Mm-hmm.
So
I see you have a lot of notes. Were there some things that you particularly wanted to talk about?
No, this is actually just the yellow notepad that I had in my bag, and it makes me look smarter. I'm going to have to qualify. I'm not a very smart person. Curtis, I told you when you asked me to be a part of this broadcast that I'm not a very smart person.
Well, you haven't started drooling on the microphone yet, so far we're doing fine.
So
now, what sort of trends do you see, Joe, in your work? Are there more enclosed buildings, or some enclosed, some open?
Again, I mean, it varies. If you look at baseball stadiums nowadays, very few baseball stadiums are enclosed, and mostly that is because it's a summer game. Most of the time, you know, if you're going to a baseball game, you're thinking, I'm going to be outside, I'm going to grab a beer, maybe a hot dog, enjoy the weather, and watch the game. Actually, I would say,
except that the World Series now is almost a winter sport.
Yeah, but I mean, that's, you know, you kind of have to you have to take some contingencies there from time to time. But you know, any normal guy, if he's going to a game, he's thinking, "Hey, I'm going to go hang out, watch a ball game." And I will say that baseball, in particular, is probably 80% hanging out, drinking beer, having a hot dog, and probably 20% watching the game.
Oh, absolutely. When I was 16, friend of mine got some comp tickets to the Yankees, the old Yankee Stadium.
Right.
And although the drinking age was 18, hanging out with my buddies and drinking beer was much more interesting than the fact that Mickey Mantle hit 3 home runs when the Yankees were playing the Minnesota Twins that day.
There you go. But you remember that.
Well, I do.
So there you go.
And I still have the ticket stub.
Joe won. The rest of you guys, like, -7.
Well, you have the right spirit.
On the subject of basketball...
Whoa, that was awkward. That was like a really awkward silence there. I'm not...
Well, really... I've been saving this question anyway. Okay. The subject of basketball arenas, which is... I don't even know if architecture and basketball arenas really even have a relationship, because if I understand, most of the time, these are just multi-purpose arenas that are being built, and...
Like the Meadowlands Arena, which is hockey in the wintertime, in between being the... basketball in the wintertime, and
well, I think that's a big.
I don't even think they use it in
Bruce
the summer.
Springsteen concerts, yeah, maybe. Springsteen.
Who doesn't want to go watch The Boss and the E Street Band?
Absolutely.
I mean, that's just a given. Who doesn't want to do that?
Well, you know, what are you building the arena for? Are you building it for the acoustics of a concert? Or, I mean, is basketball really an afterthought at that point? Or hockey, for that matter?
Well, I mean, here's the thing you kind of have to understand about sports arenas, and I just almost sounded like I knew what I was talking about. Right there.
Keep it up.
Yeah.
You're on a roll.
Obviously, if you're building a building, you know, that is for a specific event that only happens at a certain amount of the time. Let's look at the Olympics, for example. That's an event that only happens, what, every couple years?
Every 4 years.
Right. And
always in a different place.
Right. And then what happens to the building afterwards?
Well, I mean, we should talk about that. That Herzog and Demuren Bird's Nest.
It's a beautiful building.
It has its own beauty. At first I hated it, but the more that I looked at it...
I don't think Curtis agrees with me.
No, the more I looked at it, the more I was entranced. Now, I mean, that could be anything. As a matter of fact, I heard a rumor that they're going to turn it into a shopping mall because they can't fill it with enough fans.
Right. Well, I think I read something somewhere in some periodical that knows things that they originally wanted to have one of the Chinese national soccer teams to play there as their home team. But yes. That deal didn't work out. So, yeah, they're trying to find some other use for the building. But, yeah, I mean, if you use that as an example.
But you could play basketball in there. It would kind of get lost.
Sure,
but,
yeah.
But
you could do anything in there. You could hang out,
You could put in a floor and you could have ice hockey.
Exactly. So it comes to the idea where, you know, why are we going to build a building, put so much time, effort, and money into a specific project that's only going to happen at a specific time? Right. Why not have that be a multi-use building? Or why not let's have some other things happen in this building so it's not just a site-specific or, a specific venue for one particular event. Why can't it be something for multiple events?
So with the exception of what do you call where you've got a swimming competition? What do they call that?
Swim meets?
Swim meet.
I mean, the building. It's a natatorium.
Oh, right. Yeah.
The swimming pavilion is pretty much single purpose. Could be swimming, could be diving.
Could be diving.
Still, it's going to be aquatic sports.
It could be. Or they could, yeah, I mean, if you kind of dig down deep, I mean, they could potentially put some kind of flooring on top of the pool, and then it could be whatever it wants.
Trampolines.
Right, exactly. Plus water aquatics. That sounds like a pretty awesome event to me.
So am I supposing that going forward, if we continue to be in a... capital-constrained environment, that multi-purpose sports buildings would be the wave of the future?
I mean, I wouldn't say it's the wave of the future. I think they're actually... I think a lot of sports today and sports arenas now are thinking more multi-purpose just because of the fact that, again, if you're spending so much time, money, and effort into a building, why not let it have some kind of purpose beyond just its initial intent? You know, like, why can't it be a all-year-round building rather than just a building that you can only experience during the summer or during the winter?
Gosh, Joe, you're starting to sound smart.
That is not true. I want you to take that back because, again, I'm not very smart at all.
Let's take another brief break, and we'll be back.
Awesome.
You're no one else to do it to yourself.
we are still burning down the house. Brought to you by TechServe, your number one source for everything related to the Macintosh computer on West 23rd Street in New York, New York. We're here tonight with Joe Lay, a sports architect.
Hello.
And
can I do a couple of shout-outs real quick?
Oh, absolutely.
Hi, Mom. I love you. I'll see you Thanksgiving. Hope the turkey's going to be good. Should we also say, because Curtis and I met actually last Saturday at our friends, mutual friends.
Oh, yes, definitely mention them.
Barbecue. So, Carrie and Jason Gibbs, Carrie Bobo, Jason Gibbs, congratulations.
Good luck.
Good luck.
May all your problems be little ones.
Exactly. I don't know what that means. I've never been married, but sounds cool.
Children.
But congratulations. Happy happy wedding.
So we've because it's August and it's hot and we're here in the beautiful shipping container in the garden of Roberta's.
This is fantastic.
Isn't this fun?
It's very cool. Very, very cool.
Our thoughts have turned to baseball.
Sure.
But as a designer, what sort of, and don't say it doesn't matter. What sort of project do you really prefer designing?
Have I said it doesn't matter?
No, but you know, you've been equivocal about many things, which is a sign of an enlightened mind.
Okay. Well, wait. I want to actually go back to a question you had earlier, question number 13.
Okay.
Which had to do
or
I
topic
think,
13.
Topic 13, which had to do with. Is there anything new or genuine that we can improve on with sports architecture?
Yeah, where are we going?
I think there can be. And I would, in response to that question, I would say I think we can do that. It would have to depend on the fan, actually. And it's a challenge, actually, to the fan and their willingness to look at or to view a sporting event in a different way than they're used to. For example, the Velodrome in Brooklyn. Can we announce that?
I want to officially announce that sometime in the future, at the behest of Patrick Martins and the people here at Roberta's Restaurant, we will be developing the Brooklyn Velodrome, a high-speed track for sports cycling. This is not your 12-speed or 24-speed mountain bike.
This is the real deal.
The real deal track bikes. No brakes, no freewheel, high speed, maximum a bank of 45 degrees, minimum bank in the straightaways of 13 degrees. And in terms of the fan experience there, what will be different about the Brooklyn Velodrome is that the seating will be in the infield, very steep stadium seating, so that as the cyclists pass you, they're right there in your lap.
There you go.
But the second part of the fan experience.
Two parts.
Because you are not, as in a traditional velodrome, above, looking down at the entire track, will be all around the edges of the top of the track will be Jumbotron-type video displays showing the progress of cyclists and other parts of the track.
You realize that if this doesn't happen, that the public media is going to revert back to this program and say, hey, what happened to the...
It may take a week. It may take a year.
Do you notice, by the way, how I turned the tables there on
that's
this
fine.
In this conversation?
Well, that's fine.
That was like...
Now, the design problem with this concept is getting the people up into the infield, which means that the track and the seating needs to be elevated to the second level.
Right.
So that the first floor is ticket intake, a market for sustainable food products from Brooklyn and around the region, toilets, showers for the cyclist, bicycle storage, training rooms, and all that.
Right.
And then the other technical difficulty is, or challenge, shall we say, in concept, we would like for this track to be post-tensioned concrete so that you see the shape of the outside of the track as you approach.
And how fantastic would that be?
That would be so fabulous. The second challenge is a lightweight roof over the entire building that is permeable to light, daylight coming in, but not visually heavy, almost just clouds.
Right.
hanging over the track, and a very diaphanous sort of enclosure all around. And of course, we'll want it to be, to the extent possible, naturally cooled. But in terms of a new kind of sporting experience, this could be something very exciting and absolutely in tune with the emphasis on cycling as part of the sustainable environment going forward, getting away from automobiles.
Oh, yeah.
And,
of course.
And getting back to human-powered transportation in a way that's actually more efficient than walking.
And I would say, and to answer the question, 13A of the questions that were posed, that I think is a great example of improving on and doing something different with sports architecture. I think, you know, again, going back to the pure party of sports architecture where you have the field and the stands.
For our listeners who didn't go to architecture school, party is a French word that means a point of departure or a sketch idea.
Do you, you notice how the more I drink, the more kind of smarter I may seem to be?
Have another one.
The pitcher's empty, so apparently.
Well, that means we're nearing the end of our hour.
That is ridiculous. But so I'll say this quickly. I would say that the kind of newer, the next step in sports architecture, in my opinion, would be to kind of challenge how fans view the game. And by doing that, you actually manipulate the stands, which, as anyone has been to a sporting stadium or sports arena has noticed, the stands are a big part of the architecture, and they actually,
absolutely,
they dictate a lot of how the building is going to sit.
Oh, sure.
And if we can somehow change that, if we can manipulate how people's see, now I'm going back to not being smart, but how people actually view the game, then that way it allows the architect to actually kind of do some different things with the building and say, okay, instead of just having a set of stands that wrap around the field of play, why not have, you know, stands in the middle of the field, as you're suggesting?
Well, that would be a little tough with football.
It would be a little tough with football, but just the idea, if we're just talking about concepts, I think that might be kind of the next step.
Well, perhaps the very best seats are in a gondola that's slung over the 50-yard line with a glass floor.
Exactly. Or maybe the stands aren't even there at all. Maybe they're just you're in some kind of blimp and you're viewing it from the sky, and you know it only happens whenever you're floating around.
Well, that would be
like
a different that would be a different kind of sport, but
that would be.
Yeah, but
I'm thinking ideas. You're bringing me down with your negativity.
Oh,
Curtis.
Well, come on. I'm the practicality guy.
Yeah,
Joe.
I go on positive notions, not on negative vibes.
Okay, well, for a lacrosse game, you know, having different little blimps following the progress across the field, especially if you get back to Native American lacrosse, where there would be 1,000 people playing at one time over a site of tens of acres.
Yeah.
What a game that would be.
Fantastic.
Wow. And it'd be a bit like the Quidditch field in Harry Potter.
Yeah.
We've come to the end of another fun hour of Burning Down the House on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm Curtis B. Wayne, and this program is brought to you by TechServe, your number one source for everything related to the Macintosh computer. Talk to you again next time. Postscript to sports architecture. We were talking just at the very end about the Quidditch pitches.
And Harry Potter. I haven't seen the new movie yet, but I heard it's
Harry Potter and
bomb in 3D.
And the possibility that in the future, new sports may bring new architectural expressions. And if you are a fan of the Harry Potter movies, you'll see that a Quidditch pitch is a new and exciting, different kind of expression for a sports arena. And with that, then we'll now say good night and talk to you soon.
Curtis, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Joe.